This is Lectionary at Lunch for August 7th, 2011, Proper 14, Pentecost 8. The epistle reading is Romans chapter 10, verses 5 through 17. As it turns out, I'm scoring, I guess, a kind of trifecta with Lectionary at Lunch because I did last week's, and now I'm on for next week's lectionary reading as well, a scattered selection of verses from Romans 11. In last week's epistle, as I mentioned, the apostle just gets going in trying to deal with the problem of and his own anguish for the Jewish people because they do not believe in Jesus as the Christ. In considering last week's reading, I insisted that Paul's commitment to the gospel was unyielding, and yet at the same time, his concern for the people of his ethnic and religious heritage was serious too. What he had sorted out so far was that God already had exercised choices, and choices always exclude as well as include, with the consequence that not all who are from Israel are Israel. We simply don't have time to trace the apostle's argumentation from the end of last week's reading to the beginning of today's. But one of the elements of that argument is the possibility, Paul asks, what if, the possibility that God exposes his wrath in ways of his choosing and against people of his choosing in order to show his mercy in full relief. And that's relief in the sense of a relief map, the topography of God's dealings with man. At the end of chapter 9, Paul cites the Isaiah and Psalms references to the stone of stumbling. The problem is that Israel has pursued righteousness not by faith, but as if it was by works. They stumble because they do not properly believe in the promise itself, much less in the fulfillment, who is Christ. And so Paul prays that somehow they will get it right. Now we begin today's in verse 5 of chapter 10. Moeses gar graphe tein dikaiosunein tein ekto nomu hoti hoi ho poiesas alta anthropos zesetai en altois. For Moses writes, and you can take a look at the variants which move hati to the front of the phrase, Moses writes the righteousness which is from the law, has its source in the law, that the man who does these things will live by or in them. Verse 6, he de ek pisteos dikaiosune, houtos lege. But the righteousness which is from or grows out of faith speaks this way. Me apes en te cardiasu tis anabasetai es ton uranon tut esten Christon kat agagain. Do not say in your heart, who will go up or ascend into the heavens, that is, to bring Christ down. And then verse 7, tis katabesatai es tein abuson, tut esten Christon ek nekron anagagain. Or who will descend into the abyss, that is, in order to raise or bring Christ up from the dead. Verse 8, Allah tilege, but what does it say? And now he begins to quote from Deuteronomy chapter 30, Engus su tohrema esten en to stomati su kai en te cardia su tut esten tohrema tes pistios ha kerusomen. What does it say? Near to you is the word, the saying or message in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word, the message of faith, which we preach. Paul has read Deuteronomy 30 and its preceding context in a way that shows what I'm going to call inspired imagination, a way that is hard for us to imagine, though it shouldn't be so from now on. The natural tendency, I'll call it, is to read the blessings and curses of Deuteronomy in a way that makes it seem like obedience is possible. Paul rejects that reading. He reads in such a way that failure to achieve a righteousness that has its source in the law is a foregone conclusion. Israel will fail. They will be scattered. What they have to cling to, what they have to believe in, however, is the promise that God will bring them back from wherever he has scattered them. The righteousness which is from faith is to hear this promise of God and to believe it, and so to love Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul, Deuteronomy 30, verse 10. Verse 9 begins haughty, and here I want to make a, or propose at least a change from the ESV, which begins because. I think this verse actually extends Paul's answer to the question, what does it say in verse 8, by declaring the content of the rhema, the one which we are preaching, present there. Haughty functions almost like the abbreviation viz, V-I-Z, equaling namely. The word which we preach, namely, if you confess, an aorist subjunctive of homologeo, with or by your mouth, Jesus is Lord, and if you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. Then in verse 10, now he's going to expand on what he means by that preceding declaration. Cardia, dative, gar, so by or in the heart, for by or in the heart, pistu etai es dikaiosunein, stomati de homologetai es soterion. The gar here indicates that what follows explains and, in a considerable sense, grounds the preceding assertion. By the heart, it, the word, the rhema, is believed for or unto righteousness, ace. So, by the mouth, it, again the word, the rhema, is confessed for or unto salvation. Now, I'm not convinced Paul actually intends to divide righteousness and salvation in any particular way here, but by doing so, at least rhetorically, he maintains and emphasizes the faith and righteousness link. Verse 11, lege gar he graphe, for the scripture says, in other words, Paul is saying, don't just take my word for it, and now he's going to resume quoting, go back to Isaiah 28, which he had quoted near the end of chapter 9. Pas ho pistuon ep alto u katais hun thesetai. Everyone who believes on him will not be put to shame. So that is, everyone who believes in the God-appointed stone of chapter 9, verse 33. Again, more explanation, which is one of Paul's, seems to be famous for this. Ugar esten diastole judaiu te kai elenos, ha gar altos curias panton, pluton es pantas tus epicalumenus alton. For there is no distinction of Jew on the one hand and Greek, for the same Lord is of all. Same Lord is Lord of all. Being rich, pluton, to all or toward all who call on him. What it amounts to, it seems to me, is that when it says the same Lord is of all, it means the same Lord belongs, as it were, to all, or more accurately, all belong to him. And he is, furthermore, rich to all who call on him. ESV says bestowing his riches, but I think it needs to be clear that Paul isn't talking about stuff here. The richness of God toward his people is God himself. He is our treasure. And then verse 13, still one more sentence or clause introduced by Gar. Pas gar hos an epikalesetai ton onoma kuriu sothesetai. For everyone who calls, and that's an aorist middle subjunctive of epikaleo, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved, quoting from Joel. Chapter 2, verse 32 in English, chapter 3, verse 5 in the Hebrew and the Septuagint. So there he's sort of made his case for what faith entails, what it is to be people of God who call on him, and so on. Now he moves into, I think, a kind of hypothetical. Pos un epikalesontai eis hon uk epistusan. How then do they call on one in whom or unto whom they do not believe? Now, I'll point out at the beginning that in this series of questions that begins here, notice that the questions themselves are posed with aorist subjunctive forms. The antecedent conditions are expressed in aorist indicatives. The answers to the questions are always negatives if the conditions are true. For example, if they do not believe, they will not call. It's a sort of an unreal expectation. If people don't believe, then they sure aren't going to call on someone in whom they don't believe. Continuing, pos de pistusosin hu uk ekusan, how do they believe in one of whom they have not heard or do not hear? And then the last question in 14, pos de akousosin choris kerousontas. How, further, do they hear without someone, a preaching one? Present participle there. How do they hear without someone who preaches or proclaims? Verse 15 gives us still one more question. Pos de ke ruxosin ean me apostalosin. Here, at this point, we actually break slightly the pattern. The translation, how do they preach if they have not been or are not sent? Do you see what has happened? Now the sort of antecedent or kind of necessary condition also has been rendered in the subjunctive. It is not a real condition that they have not been sent. Why so? Continuing, hos horaioi, or kathos gegraptai, hos horaioi hoi podes ton euangelizomenon ta agatha, as it has been written in the scriptures. How beautiful the feet of those who herald or proclaim good things. The Septuagint uses euangelizo, which we often translate as preach good news or tell good news or something like that, to render the Hebrew root basar. Always in the PL has to do with a herald. Isaiah 52, verse 7, from which this is quoted or cited, is worth a glance because it includes a twofold heralding. First, there is an announcement of news, good news, that makes known peace, which seems good enough in itself. But second, there is they're announcing something that is expressly good is news that makes known salvation, that is, victory. So the war is over is news. We won is good news. And what Paul is getting at here is that heralds, people who euangelizein, who preach, have been sent, so proclamation has taken place. Hearing is therefore possible, so faith also is possible, and calling also is possible. Verse 16, al upantes hupekusan to euangelio. Hesiais gar lege curia tis epistusen te akoe hemon. But not all, and hupakuo have heeded, not all have heeded the proclamation. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed the hearing of us, which is to say what we have spoken. When we read a text, it is possible to read with the grain, that is, in accordance with the meanings and purposes of the text, or to read against the grain, that is, contrary to those meanings and purposes. The same notion applies to hearing. When someone says something to us, we can hear with or against the grain. We can hear rightly or wrongly. Paul realizes that some have heard against the grain of the proclamation by not hearing under, pardon my momentary excursion into etymology, hupakuo, not hearing under, submitting to the proclamation. Their hearing is not congruent with or congenial with what is spoken. And Paul recognizes that this mishearing was also the experience of the prophets, such as Isaiah. The people didn't listen to them either. Lord, who believes what they hear from us? So then the last verse of the text, ara hepistis ex akoes he de akoe diahrematos Christu. Then, ara, sort of it follows logically, faith is from, has its source in, hearing, and akoe, and the hearing which produces faith is through the word of Christ. a genitive that strikes me as epexegetical. The word, its content, is Christ. So, what a text we have here. We are always susceptible, I think, of mishearing God's word, law, and gospel. We do not hear it in such a way that we conform to it, hupakuo, but instead try to find ways to make it conform to us. We try in that way to ascend and bring Christ down to our level by making him manageable. Or we try to descend and raise Christ from the dead, as it were, by making him relevant, perhaps. None of the news stories I've seen today, Monday, July 25th, about the memorial service in Oslo for the victims of the horrendous murders of this past Friday, none of the stories I've seen have mentioned anything that a church leader might have said in that memorial service. My wife said she thought she could make out the melody for Abide With Me during a radio newscast that she heard. In his remarks, Norway's prime minister spoke about holding on to the nation's values, and an impromptu shrine has been set up outside the cathedral with the customary sea of flowers and candles and cards. But I hope someone was sent and preached so that people could hear and believe and call on the name of the Lord, because he is our only refuge in time of need, our only true comforter.